Brothers and sisters, my message tonight is found, the core of the message is found in Genesis chapter 48, verses 15 and 16. The title of my message tonight, if we can get the PowerPoint ready, is called Hindsight 2020, A Tale of the Christ. When you read the story of Ben-Hur, it's called Ben-Hur, A Tale of the Christ. And I threw that in there because that's the way how we look at it. We look at things in the Bible, and we can look in the rearview mirror of our life. And there's that saying, hindsight is 20/20. We look in hindsight, and we can see the tale of Christ in our lives. So that's my message tonight. If you're all there, I want to read from Genesis 48, as I said, verses 15 and 16. I mentioned these verses last time when I preached. And it's the blessing that Jacob gives to the sons of Joseph. He's an old man at this time. And this is what he says. And he blessed Joseph and said, God, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has fed me all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. Let my name be named upon them, and the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. Amen. My sermon tonight has two parts. The first part is looking back, looking at where Jacob finds himself in his life. And then the second part is to dive a little deeper and look into these words, this promise and this blessing that he gives to his grandchildren. So it's going to be two parts. And before I get started, the first thing that I want to state is I know I preach a lot from the Old Testament. And that's kind of why I gave the title to the sermon the title that I gave it. Because I believe that when we read through the Bible, the New Testament is where we see Christ, and we see him living vivaciously, living a full life, a life of abundance. And that's what he says, I have come that you may have life and have it abundantly. But when we look at the Old Testament, there's actually a lot of content in the Old Testament. I find it very precious and very valuable because when we look at the Old Testament, we look at it from the perspective of looking for Christ. And again, this is where we have this idea that hindsight is 20. When we look back in our lives, we can say, there's the hand of God working in my life to open doors, to close doors, to do these things. But when we're going forward, when we're in the book of Genesis, we don't see what God is doing. But then when we look back, like Jacob is doing here at the end of his life, we can say, truly, the Lord was with me. If you can go to the next slide, I have two verses from the New Testament that emphasize this point. In Romans 15, verse 4, Paul is writing and he says, whatever things were written before were written for our learning, that we, through the patience and comfort of the scriptures, might have hope. The scriptures were written for us. The Old Testament was given to us for our learnings that we could have hope. And again, he restates it in a different way in 1 Corinthians. He says, all these things happened to them, to Jacob, to Joseph, all of these stories. And they were written for our admonition, to encourage us, to admonish us, and to help us so that when we live our lives, that we would be able to live them well. And look at the last part, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. And no more appropriate time than now can we say the ends of the ages have come. And where do we have to turn? We have to turn back to the scriptures and draw closer to God. So this is the introduction. Like I said, we have two parts to this sermon. If you can go forward, I have a pretty cool picture here. If we look, I have charts like this. And I'm sure Frater Lazar has charts like this, where people have sat down and they've written down who was born, when they were born, when they had their children and stuff. And we are going to be focusing on this last section right here, the time from Abraham to Joseph, because we have Jacob, who has the blessing for the sons of Joseph, and then he calls upon the names of his fathers, Abraham and Isaac, to be a blessing unto them. So even though I have this whole chart, we're just going to zoom into this little spot right here at the bottom, and this is where we're going to focus. So if you go to the next slide. This is just a blow-up view of it again. Just to point out some of the things that we're going to see, Jacob was 91 years old when he had Joseph, and then he lives another 56 years. Joseph lived for 110 years. And then we see all of these people, they actually overlapped just a little bit. If we look carefully, Jacob was around for about 15 years before Abraham died. And Joseph was actually around for about, he lived actually his whole life until he was taken to Egypt. His grandfather was still alive. And while he was in Egypt is when Isaac died. So this is just a blow up of this picture. It's going to be on the following slides. Can you move to the next slide, please? So I want to look at the days of Jacob's life, right? This is the first part. Before we can really look and see what Jacob says and why he says it, we have to look at his life and say, how did he get to this point right here? If we look in Genesis chapter 47, a few verses before, it says that Jacob lived in the land of Egypt for 17 years. When he came there, he was 130 years old. And when he died, he was 147. So the length of Jacob's life was 147 years. And I want to point out something funny. When Jacob first presents himself in Egypt and Pharaoh says, "How old are you?" He says, "I've lived 130 years. And he says, "Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life." I think it's so funny that he looks back on his life and he's like, "Oh yeah, I just lived a little bit." If you remember the picture when it was full screen and we see Noah and he lived 900 years, right? So he's looking back on that and he says, "Few and evil have been my days that I've been here," right? So this is where we are. This is Jacob at 147 years. That's a long life, full of experience, full of all these different things, right? If we can go to the next slide. So this is where we're starting off, and we're saying Jacob, he was 147 when he speaks these words, these blessings upon his grandchildren. If we look at him, and we want to figure out exactly how old he was and stuff, and this is how we get to the number 91. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 46, it says that Joseph, when he was taken out of the prison, when he's able to interpret the dreams of the king of Egypt, of Pharaoh, it says Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. He was made the prime minister of the land. He was given the signet ring. He was put in charge of everyone and everything. And then there were the 7 years of plenty, and then there were the 2 years of famine. According to Genesis 45:11, when Joseph reveals himself to his brothers, he says, "All of you have to come to join me in Egypt because there are still 5 years of famine." So Joseph was 30, and then he lived another 7 years and then another 2 years. So he was 39 years when Jacob comes to Egypt. So we can actually number backwards and say from 130 minus the 39 years, we get that Jacob was 91 years old when Joseph was born. And think about this, that he had another son afterwards, right? Benjamin was not born yet. So Jacob is 91 years old. And now it makes sense when it first introduces Joseph and it has the story of how he gives him the coat and everything. He says he loved him because he was the son of his old age. Think about that. That'd be like Frate de Giga having a son now and being like, "Oh yeah, that's my son right there." Right? Like, it's absurd how long he lived and how much he was able to do with his life. He was the son of his old age, and that's why he loved him. So that's how we get to this number, that Jacob was 91 years old when he had Joseph. And then for 17 years, he lives with Joseph. Joseph is raised up in his house before he's sold into slavery. If we look at those two numbers, think about this for a moment. That Joseph was missing from Jacob's life for 22 years. It's a whole lifetime. He lost his son, and they got him back. It's crazy how long it was, lipsa-asta, this time when he was missing his son, when he missed fellowship with his son. And then God gave him back another 17 years once he moved back to Egypt. It's just interesting when we look at that. If we can go to the next slide. Now, I want to go a little bit further back and explain a little bit about Abraham and Isaac. So we get to this point where Jacob, he's 147. when he's giving this blessing. He was 91 when Joseph was born. And just to catch up a little bit at the beginning of his life, when Abraham was 100 years old, he had his son Isaac. That's according to Genesis 21, verse 5. And then he lived another 75 years afterwards. If we look at Isaac, he was married at the age of 40. He was married for 20 years. And then at the age of 60, he's able to pray for his wife. The Lord blesses them, and they have these two children. So if we actually look at these two numbers, Jacob was 15 years old when his grandfather Abraham died. Father Abraham had many sons, right? And one of them was Jacob. So Jacob, when he was a young man, until he was 15, he heard all the stories of Abraham. He heard the stories of him walking from Ur of the Chaldeans out to Canaan. He heard the story of him going to Egypt. He heard the story of him coming back. He heard the story of the promise of God, where the Spirit of the Lord came and God spoke to Abraham and he blessed him. He said, I'm going to bless you and you're going to be blessed so that your children will be like the sand of the sea and like the stars in the heavens. He heard the story of how the Lord came down and came to destroy the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, and Abraham made food and ate with him and talked with him and walked with him. He heard all these stories for at least 15 years before Abraham died. And then, just to finish this off, we have Isaac. As I stated, he was 60 years old when he had his two sons, and then he lived to 180 years. So Jacob was 120 years old when his father died. 120 years old when his father died. So again, while he lived in Canaan, he could hear about all these things about God, how God had walked with Isaac, how Isaac went out into the field to meditate, how God brought him a wife, how God blessed him with all these different things. He heard about all these things as a child. And then we have this big gap in his life before he comes back to Canaan, back to the promised land. And then he lives for another oh so much time before his father dies. And he continues this legacy. And he blesses his children and his grandchildren with the blessing that he got from his fathers. Now, if you can go to the next slide. This is what I called the lost years. If we look at Jacob's timeline, he was 91 years old when Joseph was born. And when he comes back to Canaan, actually, if you can look at this verse first, right, before we look at this verse. In Genesis 22, verse 22, he's coming back into Canaan, and he's about to meet Esau, and he says that he arose that night, he took his two wives, the two female servants, his 11 sons, and crossed over the ford of Jabbok. Right? This is the 11 sons, because Benjamin has not been born yet, right? So this is at some point before Joseph has been born. We don't know how old he is, but we can say, let's say it was 91, 92, 93, 94, 95 years of age, okay? If Joseph was a lad of 4 years old when Jacob was going back, and now we look at this first verse on the top, this is when Jacob is leaving Paddan Aram, and he's talking to his father-in-law. He says, I have been in your house for 20 years, I have served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock. So we can guess that Jacob was about 75 years old when he left the land of Canaan. So from his birth till about the age of 15, he heard the stories of Abraham, and they were just stories. And then as he grew up, he cheated out his brother of his blessing. He cheated of his birthright. And eventually he fled. And he fled being a young single man of 75 years of age. Something like that, right? And he goes to Paddan Aram. He goes to his uncle. And the Lord blesses him. The Lord is with him and blesses him. I love it. And it says the same thing about Joseph. When Joseph was in Egypt, he was thrown in the prison. And the Lord was with him. The same thing with Jacob. The Lord was with him. Even though he didn't see it and he didn't know it, the Lord was with him even at the young age of 75 when he went on his great journey for his life. All right, if you can go to the next slide. Now, That's the first part of the sermon, where we look kind of at the story of Jacob's life from a 30,000-foot view, and we say, where was he when he was doing these different things, when he was having these different experiences? And now, we're going to look at the meat of the passage again, and we're going to take it apart a little bit. He said, God, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has fed me all my life long to this day. The angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. Let my name be named upon them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And I want to focus on this because we start off with Jacob when he left the land of Canaan, about 75 years of age, with nothing except a staff and a flask of oil. And that flask of oil, he poured it out in Bethel because he said, this is the house of God. And this is what he said. He said in Bethel, at 75 years of age, having heard all these stories as a child and now going out into the world, he had his first experience with God where he dreamed the dream of the ladder, right? Jacob's ladder. He had this dream, and he says, if God will be with me and keep me in this way that I'm going and give me bread to eat and clothing to put on, and notice what he blessed his children with. He said, the God who has fed me all my life long to this day. At the end of his life, he looks back and he says, God wasn't just with me from the age of 75. God was with me long before that, but I didn't see him. I didn't know that he was with me until I first experienced him. Because when I was 75 and I made this promise and I said, if God is with me and if God blesses me and if I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. And this stone which I have set up as a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that you gave me, I will surely give a tenth to you. If you doubt that he heard the stories of Abraham, right here, it's proof. Because he knew the story of Abraham when he went and fought and came back and met the high king, the priest of Melchizedek, and he gave him a tenth. And this is on his mind. He knows that he met God, and that he has to give him something back. He has to give him something in return. More than just his words, more than just a little sacrifice, he has to give from all that he has, from all that he earns, it has to be given back to God. But it's so interesting because here he's bartering with God. He's still Jacob, and he says, I'm going to make this, I'm going to win this, and then with what I win, when I come back, if I'm successful, and if you bless me, I'll give it back to you, God. And now at the end of his life, these words come back to his mind, and he says, God before him, my father, Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has fed me all my life long to this day. Not just from this point where he chose to serve God, but from long before where God chose him and said that I'm going to use him and I'm going to bless him. If we keep going, so this is the first thing. We see that Jacob, during his life, sometime between the age of 75 and the age of 147, his relationship with God has truly changed. If you want to see further proof of it, I have a few more points. The first one I already mentioned, the tithe. It comes from Abraham's stories that he was like, oh yeah, I'm going to sacrifice to God. I'm going to build an altar and do just like what my fathers did before me. And sure enough, when he comes back, he makes altars in different places. He stops right after he meets Esau. He makes an altar in that place. He's called by God to go back to Bethel. He makes an altar in that place. He knew these things, but it was kind of a ritual, because his fathers had done it. He goes from Bethel out to Paddan Aram, and he's brought to the lowest place that he can possibly go. He's made a shepherd, the worthless people, the lowest people in the society. And God uses that to train him and to model him and to work in his heart and in his mind. When he comes back and he meets Esau, he isn't like, oh yeah, I'm the one who stole the birthright and stuff, but he's humble with his own brother, the person that he cheated and lied to. God has worked in his heart through his life. In chapter 34, we see the story of how his sons fight with the men of Shechem. They basically trick them, right? They kill all the men. And then he's forced to flee through the land of Canaan because he says the people surrounding will come and fight me, and because I only have a small handful of people, I'll be destroyed. Instead of being prosperous and being successful, he feels like he's running for his life. And then in chapter 35, he feels like he's running for his life, and God calls him, and he says, get up, put away all the evil, go to Bethel. I want you to rededicate your life to me. I brought you back to Canaan. I want you to do more than just be a wandering shepherd in this land. And so Jacob, he fulfills the word of God. He listens to him. They put away the foreign idols and stuff. He grabs his children and his wives and his family, and he goes out to Bethel. And it's the story of how he changes. He left as a thief, as a robber, as a supplanter, Jacob. And he goes through these experiences that humble him, that cause him to listen to God, to hear God's voice when God calls him. And that's why he starts off with this part of the blessing. His relationship with God has changed completely from a God who will just bless him with stuff to a God who he listens to. I have another verse later on when God calls him to Egypt. And it's the same thing. God calls him and says, don't fear, I'm going to be with you. And Jacob is strengthened in his heart, and he follows God, what God says. The next thing that we see is that Jacob's identity was changed. When we read these verses, verse 16, it says, right, he starts off and he says, God, the God of my fathers, who has blessed me, who has helped me with all this. And then he says this, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil. Bless the lads, let my name be named upon them, and so on. When we see Jacob, like I already mentioned, his name means supplanter, the trickster, the one who stole from his brother, who robbed him of his birthright, who lied to his father, and yet he meets God. He met him at a place that he later named Peniel, which is what those camps were named after, the face of God. He meets the angel of the Lord. And he wrestles with him, and he fights with him, and then he says, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. And what does the angel reply to him? What is your name? Oh, it's Jacob. No, no, no. You're not going to be named Jacob anymore. Your name is Israel, which means prince with God. But as we read through the book of Genesis, if you pay attention, he's still called Jacob. For the next few chapters, nobody calls him Israel. That third verse that I have up there, Genesis 33:20. After he has this experience, he goes, he meets his brother Esau, and then at the place where he stops, he erects an altar, and he calls it El Elohe Israel, God, the God of Israel. But that's it. It stops there. He's not called Israel for the next three chapters. I didn't put this verse down, I apologize. But in Genesis chapter 35, verse 10, the Lord meets him again, and he says, your name is Jacob. Your name shall not be called Jacob anymore, but Israel shall be your name. So he called his name Israel. But again, from here on, we don't see him being called Israel. If you look carefully through the next few chapters, any time that it mentions him as Jacob. And Jacob had a son, Joseph, who was 17. And Jacob gave a coat to his son. And Jacob mourned for his son. And Jacob did this, and Jacob did that. But look here at the end of his life before he blesses his grandchildren. The person who wrote the scriptures, he was writing knowing Jacob. Because that's how the children of Israel called him. They called him Jacob everywhere. Even the author, he says, Jacob was told, look, your son Joseph is coming to you. This is when he's old, he's lying in bed, he's a tired, weak man, but look what it says. Israel strengthened himself and sat up in his bed. And if you look in chapter 48, you could list verse by verse where it says, Israel took the sons of Joseph, and Israel blessed them, and Israel said this. In between the years of the age of 91 to 147. He had already started walking with God. He had already started talking with God, but his name was being changed. His identity was being renewed through his relationship with God. At first, he started off as scared Jacob, who had to fight and work for everything that he had. And God said, "No, your name is Israel." And he forgot, and he was afraid that the nations around him would attack him and fight him and destroy him. And God said, "No, no, no, don't forget. Your name was Jacob, but you are Israel now. Your life going forward is not what it used to be. Your identity has changed because of this relationship that we have." One of my favorite examples of this, I heard this, was when God came to Gideon. And Gideon, a nice strapping young man, is threshing wheat in the bottom of a wine press. So nobody finds him. So nobody sees him. He's terrified. And the angel of the Lord comes to him and does the same thing that he did right here to Jacob. He says, "The Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor." And you can almost imagine Gideon, he's like looking around. He's like, "Hold up, who is this guy talking to? Because I'm not a mighty man of valor." But you see, the Lord wanted to change his identity. He wanted to make him into a mighty man of valor. He wanted to change Jacob from being a trickster and a liar to being Israel, to being a prince with God. And I love that when you get to the end of Jacob's life, he's no longer Jacob. That's not how he thinks of himself. When he's sitting there on his bed and he strengthens himself, he doesn't say, "Come on, Jacob, we got to get up and we got to get going." He says, "Come on, Israel, we have to stand up. We still have work that we need to do." Our name is changed. Our identity is changed through our relationship with God. If I can read those verses, Genesis 46, verses 2 and 3. "Then the Lord God spoke to Israel in the vision of the night, and he said, 'Jacob, Jacob,' and he said, 'Here I am.' And he said, 'I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I'll make of you a great nation there." So we see these first two things. We see that his relationship with God has been changed. We see how his identity has been changed. How he thinks of himself is changed. So when he blesses his grandchildren, it isn't just a blessing of things, but it's a blessing of his relationship with God. It's a blessing of identity, of being with God. And the last thing I want to say, if you can put it, it's a perspective change. If we read from there on, he puts his hands upon his grandchildren, and he blesses them. And Joseph is like, "No, no, no, you have to put your hands the other way. You have to put your right hand on Manasseh because he's older. And you have to put your left hand on Ephraim because he's younger." And Jacob, Israel, he says, "No, no, 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 no. I know what I'm doing. Don't worry about it. I'm going to bless them. And this is how I'm going to bless them." And then this, it's a very interesting verse. And this was actually how I started this whole sermon, because I read this verse and I was like, "Wait a second, that doesn't make sense." The last verse from this chapter, as he's blessing the sons of Joseph, he says this, "Moreover, I have given to you one portion above your brothers, which I took from the hand of the Amorite with my sword and with my bow." I bet you guys didn't think of this before, because I never thought of it. But Jacob was a warrior. We have the story of his sons cheating out the men of Shechem and killing them, but we never think of Jacob having gone to war. But right here, he actually alludes to something. He says, "You know, I went to war. I went to battle. I fought with my bow. I fought with my sword. The Lord blessed me. He prospered me." And we have no stories about this. We have no idea who he fought with, when he fought with them, all of this stuff. If we look in history books, that's the important things, the battles. Who did this? Who did that? Who did all these different things? And battles are the things that change history. But this is the very last thing that is on the mind of Jacob. As he's old, as he's lived his life, he says, "All those things, the battles that I fought, the victories that I won, those don't matter. Those are the last things, the littlest things. The more important things, my relationship with God, my identity in God, those are what I want you to remember. This, it's just by the way, I got an extra for you. if we read in Deuteronomy chapter 3, verse 8, because I dug a little bit and I was like, no, 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 no. Right from here, he goes into chapter 49 and he blesses his sons and he prophesies over each one of them. And I thought, this has got to be a blessing and a prophecy. And I wanted to look a little bit more because he says, I have given you one portion of your brothers, which I took from the hand of the Amorite with my sword and with my bow. If we fast forward a few hundred years, the children of Israel are about to go into the land of Canaan, about to conquer everything. And listen to this. Moses is reciting all the things that God has done for them. And he says, verse 8, chapter 3, verse 8, at that time, as we were going through, we took the land from the hand of the two kings of the Amorites who are on this side of the Jordan, right, on the east side. And he says, from the river Arnon to the river, to Mount Hermon. Notice who he says, we took it, the land at that time from the hand of the two kings of the Amorites. And what did Jacob say? He said, moreover, I give to you one extra portion, which I took from the hand of the Amorites. If you can go, this is the last slide. It's just a picture. And I zoomed in a little bit because it didn't fit. But if we look at the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. I guess my laser pen doesn't work anymore. If we look at the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, they were given two portions. There was Manasseh and there was Ephraim. They were each given a portion because they were, because when they split the property, the land and everything, Levi was not given any land territory, right? So Ephraim got one of them and Manasseh got the other. But if we actually look on the east side of the Jordan, where Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh stayed, this was the land that Jacob was actually prophesying about. And he was saying, this land, I conquered it, and it's going to be yours. It's going to be a blessing for you. If you look at the river at the top, that's the river. And then if you scroll down all the way at the very bottom, just below where I cut it off, that's where the mountain is. It's actually below Mount Hermon, below Mount Nebo, below Reuben. So I believe that this was something that Jacob was actually prophesying about his sons hundreds of years in the future, that they were going to get this extra plot. And if you look at Manasseh, they got essentially two pieces of dirt. They didn't get just the one. They got one extra portion above all the other sons. And truly, they were blessed. And I want to have that thought, you know, because this was the afterthought of Jacob. I got all this stuff. I got this land. This is the blessing that you guys are going to fight for and work for, but it's just land. That's the last thing. That's the thing that's least important. The more important things that the God before whom my fathers walked, Abraham, his stories that I heard, Isaac, who walked with God and met him in the fields, when I walked with God, when I wrestled with the angel of the Lord. And then it begs the question, sometime between 91 years of age and 147, did he ever walk with God again? Did the angel of the Lord ever come again and walk with him and talk with him? But we just don't have it recorded in the scriptures. We know that his life was completely changed. His relationship with God, how he viewed his relationship with God, was totally different. His identity was very different. And I love, again, in verse 16, how he emphasizes it's this angel who has redeemed me from all evil. You know, the one who messed up my hip? That one. That God who is strong with me, who is dur with me. He was the one who has redeemed me from all my evil. It wasn't that I was good enough or that I was awesome enough or that I worked my way up and that I was blessed because of my own thing, but it was because he redeemed me. He actually here has foresight. He sees in the future that this angel, Jesus, the Christophany, would be the one to redeem him from all his evil. It wasn't just that he would bless him while he was on earth, but that he would redeem him from his sins, from his iniquities. So, the title of my sermon was Hindsight 2020, A Tale of the Christ. We see when we look at the story of Jacob, how Christ is woven into him. How he met him, how he walked with him, how he struggled with him. And at the end, it changes heart. It changes relationship. It changes identity, how he walked and he lived with the people around him, with his sons. And then he was able to be a blessing. Să rostească cuvinte așa faine peste copii și peste nepoții săi. It's so beautiful, the words that he was able to bless them with, because he truly had an experience and a relationship with God. That's the end of my sermon. I want to invite you all to stand, if I can. And this is my desire when we read the Word of God, that we would see Christ, that he would come to life in us, just like we look in our past and we see how he works in us, in our lives, that we'd be able to do the same thing when we read the scriptures. So as we close tonight, I'd like us to pray that God would open our eyes to see how he has worked in our lives so that we can to recognize his work, his hand in our lives, so that we could be a blessing unto others, but that it would be truly from us, from our relationship with God and our identity to be founded and grounded in Christ and what Christ has done for us.